to Scuderia F1, the podcast that's always up to speed with the latest Formula One news. Follow us on Twitter at Scuderia F1 Pod and subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher. Now, here are your hosts, Mark Daly and Kevin Laramie.
Hey everybody, what is up? Welcome to the podcast that is always up to speed with Formula One here on the Overtime Media Network. Mark Daly here, hanging out once again in the Vivid Seats studio, and we're just going to launch right into it this week. There's so much to talk about, and I apologize right off the top of the bat here because the show is a little bit late this week, as it is usually, but I was under the weather for a couple of nights, and it was just difficult to find any energy. I just spent the time convalescing and trying to get back to normal, and then wake up this morning and felt perfectly fine, so just in time for the weekend, so that's all good. And of course, there is so much to talk about. We had the Belgian Grand Prix at Spa-Francorchamps last weekend, Italian Grand Prix coming up at Monza, and by the time that this show goes out for download in just a couple of hours, we will just be, again, a couple of hours away from the first practice session at Monza. So exciting. Love all these back-to-back weekends, and we're going to get a lot more of them next year, what with 22 races on the calendar, and it's definitely, it's always a highlight when we have back-to-back race weekends. And, of course, there is sad news to talk about this week. And, of course, I'm referring to the unfortunate and tragic death of Antoine Hubert in the Formula 2 race at Spa last weekend. Freak, unlucky, just call it what you will, but it's tragic. Just 22 years of age, and our thoughts and prayers go out to Antoine's family and friends for their loss. So don't want to dwell on that. We don't want to make light of it, of course, either. But we are just going to keep going on and do what we always do here. And let's just quickly go back and take a look at the results from Spa last weekend. And Charles Leclerc finally gets his first win in Formula One, his first career win for Ferrari, and that's been a long time coming. It's well, he's had his opportunities several times this year, but was denied one way or another. Bahrain was one that he should have won, but the car let him down, and then Austria was another one that looked like Charles was on course to win, but of course Max Verstappen had something to say about that. He beat Lewis Hamilton by just under a second, and Valtteri Bottas came home in third to claim third place for Mercedes, and Sebastian Vettel miles behind, almost half a minute behind Valtteri Bottas in the second Ferrari. And in fifth position, Alexander Albon in the Red Bull, the sole remaining Red Bull after Max Verstappen crashed out on lap one and at turn one. More on that in just a moment. Alexander Albon, I think that his race can be classified as maybe not all that great in the first half, but certainly second half of the race, very, very good. And a fifth place, a very solid start to his Red Bull racing career. So we see how that goes over the next number of races until the end of the year. Sixth was Sergio Perez in the Racing Point. Seventh was Danny Kvyat in the Scuderia Toro Rosso. Number eight was the Hulk, Nico Hülkenberg, in the first of the Renault. And ninth was Pierre Gasly in the other Toro Rosso. And then 10th, Lance Stroll coming home, claiming a rare point for himself in the second Racing Point. So it was an exciting race. Ferrari had the front row lockout, and they really, well, I mean, we were talking about the last little while, just the disadvantage that Ferrari has, the lack of downforce and all the effects that has with the lack of grip and the lack of downforce putting heat into the tires and getting them into the optimum operating temperature. But their straight line speed, all the advantage around Spa this past weekend, and it was interesting to watch, especially after the pit stop. And I really thought that what we've seen at certain times this year, that the Ferrari was really quite good on the medium tires. I mean, go back to Baku, for one example, several months ago now. And they were good for a little while, but it was absolutely crucial, the role that that Sebastian Vettel played. He was in the lead and was told to switch around for Charles Leclerc, and Vettel played an absolutely crucial role in just holding up Lewis Hamilton enough that I think that by the time the end of the race, I mean, if there's maybe five more laps, I think that Hamilton probably would have caught and passed Charles Leclerc. I mean, like I say, he was only a second behind him by the time they got to the finish line. A couple more laps, it could have easily been a victory for Lewis Hamilton. But that blocking role, that interfering role, whatever you want to call it, supporting role that Sebastian Vettel played in Spa. Absolutely super important. It just slowed down Lewis enough, just those couple of laps. But it was interesting watching them go up the Kemmel straight there, and just the straight line speed that the Ferrari had, because we've seen numerous examples, and we saw some really good ones, especially Pierre Gasly and Kimi Raikkonen. Was it Alexander Albon or was it Sergio Perez? I can't remember. The second car reenacting Roberto Zonta, Mika Hakkinen, Michael Schumacher, and that infamous pass from about 15 or 20 years ago was almost a carbon copy of it. But in those cases, you could see the cars that were really close to one another with the effect of DRS really get into the slipstream and really slingshot in front of the cars that they were trying to pass. But it was not that case with the Mercedes, even when they got close to having DRS or even in DRS range. Once they got up and they just started to accelerate up the Kemmel straight there, it was absolutely... It was awesome. I mean, that straight line speed that the Ferrari had, you could just see them disappearing a little ways. And I think it must have been very frustrating for the Mercedes drivers and anybody else trying to keep up with them. But again, the way that things turned out, and then once Sebastian Vettel and Charles Leclerc had switched places, how dramatically his pace dropped off and how much he was struggling. I mean, even Lewis Hamilton said that he was struggling a little bit on the medium tires, but nothing as bad as Sebastian Vettel. I mean, he was really a non-factor in that race and just completely... I don't know what to say. Complete non-factor. I mean, you don't really expect to see Sebastian Vettel playing a supporting role like that. I mean, he's supposed to be the number one driver there, but that's what teammates are for. I mean, obviously, Charles was the faster of the two drivers on the day. I mean, he was fast all weekend long, and you got to think of the bigger picture, and I think that Sebastian Vettel is a good teammate in that way, and I think that obviously he must be disappointed that he wasn't challenging for the race himself. And in the last previous two races, I mean, he'd done quite well to get onto the podiums. I mean, Germany was a little bit fortuitous what with the weather, but both in Germany and also in Hungary, I think it was Sebastian's and Ferrari's tactics that were on point for once. I mean, talked about many times over the years on this program just how that the strategy and the pit stops just haven't always worked out, and you kind of sit there and watch. Well, that really didn't work out to their advantage. Anyways, it didn't really work out the way that they wanted to. And what really surprised me even more that Sebastian Vettel was so lacking in pace on the medium tires is that the late pit stop that he made to switch to soft tires at the end of the race, again, I thought, well, this might be a bit of an inspired move. I mean, I can't exactly remember what the predicted advantage or difference between the medium and the soft tires were, but let's say it's about 3/4 or 1 second. With the amount of time that was left, it seemed entirely doable that he could catch up and get within arm's length of Valtteri Bottas. And indeed, on the Sky Sports broadcast, which we get on TSN here in Canada, they were saying exactly that Mercedes were predicting that by the lap 44, which was the final lap of the race, that Vettel would be within a couple of seconds of Valtteri Bottas. I mean, it didn't actually turn out that way. I mean, anything but. And, well, maybe it was one of those cases that Vettel thought, well, there's no point really pushing the car and the equipment too hard. I mean, it seemed like it would be a very difficult thing to close that gap, and it didn't really come down. We would have expected to see some big gains within the first couple of laps after switching back to the soft tires, which he had on at the start of the race, but it just didn't really happen. So I really wonder if it was a case of live to fight another day for Sebastian Vettel, because we've got, like I said, we've got another race coming up, and we've seen all sorts of people have problems with engines, and we saw a couple of engines blow over the course of the weekend, and well, we all know what that means with grid penalties, and that would just be, I think, add put a little bit of salt in the wound that has been a very difficult year for Ferrari, obviously. And when you look at it, though, you would think that these couple of races, and my wife and I were talking about it before the race, that now we're going to a couple of really fast circuits in Spa and then Monza, that's where you would expect that if Ferrari's going to win any race at all this year, it might be one of those two races just due to the fact that they are very, well, what we always would call power circuits, lots of straightaways and not so many technical areas. And I think it's going to be the same again at Monza this weekend. It's going to be very interesting. I mean, there aren't really too many tight, twisty corners. I mean, there's a chicane and, there are lots of areas where you can run full throttle. And I think, again, that will be to the benefit of Ferrari. But the thing is, and I find it interesting too, is that you can never really write off a Mercedes in these circumstances as well, because every time we think that Ferrari might have an advantage, the advantage they have isn't really as much as we think. I mean, I think they looked very solid in qualifying, obviously, coming back and locking out the front row. I mean, Charles Leclerc setting a pole time of 142.519. Sebastian Vettel was a little ways off. I mean, his second place was the time he set for second on the grid was 143.267. I mean, just a whisker ahead of Lewis Hamilton, whose time was a 143.282. But of course, once they get into race trim and the green light goes on Sunday, it turns out to be completely different. And it really was a case that they needed to work as a team. I think that was one of the big complaints that I had over the past couple of years with Kimi Raikkonen and Sebastian Vettel as teammates. It seemed that many times where you had the two Mercedes cars Sebastian Vettel maybe leading the race or trying to do something, didn't always have the benefit of having Kimi there to back him up. I mean, Kimi was quick, but maybe not quick enough. But it really worked out this weekend for the Ferraris. And maybe this is getting a little bit off of track, but I was thinking to watching the race this past weekend, just the issues I think that they have with the design of the car and the low downforce and just the lack of grip that they have, and they just doesn't handle as good through the corners as obviously the Mercedes for one, and a number of other cars. Is I really wonder how much Sebastian Vettel is not suited to the SF90 this year, and how much it just really is a difficult car to drive and get it to do the things that he wants to do. I mean, it's one thing if you don't have a lot of grip in the car and downforce in the car, but also if the tires aren't getting up to temperature, I mean, you're going to be lacking the grip, just the mechanical grip from the tires itself. So it will be interesting to see over time if what Sebastian has to say, and if and next year when the new car comes out, are they going to be able to rectify the problems and the issues that they had this year? Because I mean, we can sit here and talk about it until the cows come home, just how frustrating and disappointing for the Ferrari drivers it must be. But I mean, Charles is managing to get things done with it, or he did this past weekend anyways. But that was a lot of the case last year too, when Charles was still driving for Sauber Alfa Romeo, and his teammate Marcus Ericsson, of course, that car, the C37 or whatever it was called, was obviously not one of the best cars on the grid. But be that as it may, Charles was still able to get more out of that car and perform a much better in it than Marcus Ericsson was. And he's proving the same again with Sebastian Vettel this year. I mean, it really is quite amazing how he's really settled in. I mean, he's had some difficult moments. I mean, I'm not going to deny that at all. I mean, Bahrain is one. The frustrations and the bitter disappointment in Monaco, and just how that was just a disaster for him at his home Grand Prix. And there are other instances of that as well. But I mean, overall, I mean, I think Charles Leclerc has lived up to the hype, to the expectations this year. And when you think about it, I mean, for a guy that's just into one of the big teams for the first time and has only just got over a dozen races under his belt, I mean, he really has done some phenomenal things. I mean, he's only won one race, but it could have been a couple of more easily if things had worked out a little bit different. But anyway, so let's just go back to what we were just talking about a little bit earlier. And because now we have the race behind us, we should just quickly talk about the standings in the drivers in the world and the constructors championship before we head into the break. But I still want to talk about a bunch of other things that went on in the race itself. But first of all, the drivers championship, Lewis Hamilton still running away with it, 65 points ahead of his teammate Valtteri Bottas. Lewis on top now with 268 points. Valtteri Bottas, 203. Max Verstappen in third position with 181. Even though he didn't score a single point, still manages to stay ahead of Sebastian Vettel in the world champion. And Seb currently fourth with 169 points. And Charles Leclerc rounding out the top five with 157. And on the constructor side, again, it is Mercedes just running away with it this time. They didn't get the maximum points with a 1-2 finish, but still second and third is not all that bad. Mercedes miles and miles ahead of everyone else, 471 points in the constructors, followed by Ferrari with 326, Red Bull third with 254, and McLaren 82 points for fourth in the world championship, and Toro Rosso catching up slightly. They now have 51 points, which is good enough for fifth position in the world championship, or in the constructors championship. So good to see. So talking a little bit more about Italy, and well, actually, I think I'm going to jump into a quick break here since we're already 15 minutes into it. I want to talk about Max Verstappen and Kimi Raikkonen, and we'll do that in just a moment. And so please don't go away. We'll be right back after a short message from our sponsors. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time, or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, welcome back to Scuderia F1 here on the Overtime Media Network, coming to you once again from the Vivid Seats studio. Mark Daly here, talking to you about the Belgian Grand Prix, and I want to talk now about Kimi Raikkonen and Max Verstappen. Lap 1, turn 1, it all comes to an end for Max. Well, he made it a couple more corners before he crashed out due to a broken steering arm in an incident which I think you can only lay the blame at Max Verstappen's feet. He did talk to the media after his accident and he was back in the pit lane. I mean, he was a little bit... I mean, he admitted sort of roundabout and kind of that it was his fault, but he still laid some blame at the feet of Kimi Raikkonen. And I don't really think that's entirely fair. I mean, we know that that's a corner where it's ended in tears for so many people. I mean, there have been so many accidents there down the year. I mean, just go back a year ago, there was that opening lap crash that all was kicked off by Nico Hülkenberg getting a little out of shape and leaving his braking too late. And that ended up in Fernando Alonso being launched airborne and then come crashing down on the halo of Charles Leclerc. And then, well, that ended the race for a couple of guys right then and there. So there is a history at that corner. And Max, once again, gets a bad start, loses some ground right at the start there when the lights went green. But, I mean, he was being very optimistic. And when you look at the replay and you see where Max comes comes from trying to make that overtake take on Kimi Raikkonen, I mean, the geometry is all wrong. I mean, even if he managed to get in front of that, I mean, Kimi Raikkonen there, he was going to shoot straight across the track. I mean, chances are, I think there might have been a coming together or the loss of a front wing, even if he managed to stick his nose and Kimi eased off. But realistically speaking, I mean, the way that he tucked up on the inside, we all know how Max is going to take or make a move on someone. I mean, if you give him an inch, he's going to take a mile. I mean, any glimpse of daylight that he gets going into a corner, I mean, you know that Max is going to go for it. But just there and just the position and just how far back he was, I don't think that Kimi Raikkonen had any chance of seeing him just to where he was. And by the time he was turning in, I mean, Max wouldn't have even been in his rearview mirror. So I think that you have to lay all the blame there for Max Verstappen. I mean, Max, of course, right on the radio saying something to the effect of, oh, he cut me off, or, you know, what's he doing? But for me, I think Max has got to own that one. And disappointing. I mean, I think it might have been a little bit of a stretch for Max to win this one. But certainly, I mean, we've seen that the Red Bulls are more than a match for the Ferraris. So it would have, I think he's denied us, unfortunately, of his presence, his participation in the race, and some of the things that he could have done. Because, I mean, the way that Sebastian Vettel was struggling, I think for sure that he would have been able to fight with him. And, I mean, there wasn't really all that much big of a difference between Ferrari and Mercedes for quite a bit. So, I mean, I think that that Max would have been, I think, a pretty good candidate for a podium out of all that one. I don't know if he would have been speedy enough to keep up or stick his nose in there with Lewis Hamilton and Charles Leclerc and maybe try and have a shot at the win. But I think that he had a legit shot for challenging Sebastian Vettel and also Valtteri Bottas, who kind of got through the race without really making any headlines, good or bad. I mean, a bit of a bland result, but I guess, you know, he still got a podium, still getting more points for the team. And, you know, he just got a 1-year extension on his contract at Mercedes, which is something we've been speculating and wondering about for a long, long time, but a fairly uneventful race for him. But yeah, I mean, Max, I think that was a bit of a throwback to the more impatient Max, the less mature Max of maybe a year and a half or definitely pre-Monaco 2018. Max Verstappen, that looked like a little bit of a too much of an impulsive move. And then just the way that once they went through Eau Rouge into Radeon, you could tell that there was something seriously wrong with the car, and there was damage to the front suspension on the left hand side, and damage to the steering arm. And I mean, he just kind of glided off the track and went into the barriers there, and that was the end of his race. And I mean, Kimi Raikkonen too, I mean, the whole section of floor was basically missing in that corner of the car, and his race was obviously severely compromised after that. And it was just too much for him to come back and really have a decent afternoon or run it at anything after that. And it was unfortunate. I mean, Kimi had kind of shown a couple of things. I know he's been struggling a little bit. Apparently, he'd hurt himself in a motocross accident during the summer break. And then he gets into it with a bit of an altercation, apparently, with a drunken lout in the pit lane or behind the pit lane there during the weekend. So it was disappointing from both of them. And hopefully Max comes back and makes up for that this weekend. I mean, there were tens of thousands of Dutch fans, Max Verstappen fans around Spa-Francorchamps, and I'm sure every single one of them went home disappointed when their boy didn't even make it around a full lap at the start of the race. But we'll move ahead and we'll move away from Spa at the moment, although there were still plenty of other exciting things that we saw. I mean, Antonio Giovinazzi making a very impressive move to pass Danny Ricciardo, as it's so many other people. Renault, not a good look for them again this weekend. I know that, well, we'll talk about a little bit later, but Ricciardo saying that he felt that it was a step forward for them at Spa this past weekend. But yeah, Giovinazzi and Alex Albon, you know, making some or contradicting that statement at the very least. But I want to talk a little bit more about some of the other news going around Formula One at the moment. And well, I mean, where do we really start? There is quite a lot of them. Well, the first news we should start with is that Monza, the Italian Grand Prix, or the home of the Italian Grand Prix, has just secured a new contract to stay on the F1 calendar for 5 more years. And that was announced a little bit earlier this week. And, well, I think that's great news because, I mean, and I know I sound like a broken record at times, but The Italian Grand Prix at Monza for me is one of those traditional races that just has to be on the calendar each and every year. It's just one of those places that I can't really picture a Formula One race season without it. So glad to hear that that it's been renewed. And of course, it is a part of the record 22 race calendar, which was announced just over a week ago. I mean, we're going into uncharted territories. I mean, we've seen 20 races, 21 races a number of times over the past several years, but 22 races next year. Really looking forward to that, and really pumped up and glad that Monza is going to be a part of it for a long, long time to come. All right, and well, in other news. So this is an interesting one. Apparently, the TV audience for Formula One in the United States of America is up 20% in 2019 this year. And this comes from ESPN, who have the rights to broadcast Formula One in the USA. And says that the increased popularity with last week's Belgian Grand Prix has pulled in an average of 660,000 viewers on ESPN2. And that's a 37% increase over the Belgian Grand Prix from just a year ago, and then 29% up on the viewership that was on NBCSN in 2017. So that's really great, and also it exceeded the biggest event that I can tell was ESPN's audience of 695,000 viewers for watching a race way back in 1995. But it actually the audience peaked at quite a bit at 770,000, almost 770,000 viewers. Charles went on to win his Formula One win, and it's great to see. I mean, the thing is, we all know that Americans love cars, and sports, and racing, and motorsport in general. But it really is interesting to see that it is trending upwards like that. And all the more interesting is that there is only at the moment one U.S. Grand Prix. I mean, the Circuit of Americas in Austin, Texas, is one track I really enjoy. I mean, there's been some good races there over the past couple of years, and it kind of really adds fuel to the fire. I mean, we've had this discussion on the show before. I mean, the talks to get a second Grand Prix in the States in Miami, I mean, that's still ongoing. It looked like it was dead because some of the opposition and problems they were having at the local level to get the race sorted out and get going there. Because I mean, at one point it sounded like it was almost like a sure lock to have a race in Miami for 2020, and then it very quickly flamed out, and then it sort of come back to life again. But I mean, there have been other places that have mentioned. New York's been one, Vegas has been one. So I mean, certainly the appetite seems to be there. I mean, the race at the Circuit of the Americas always seems to be very well attended, and I'm sure that would be the case anywhere else. I mean, if they were able to get a race in Vegas, be it a street circuit or some sort of a purpose-built track out there, whatever the case may be. I mean, I can't think of a better long weekend. I mean, a lot of people where I live in Vancouver, I mean, lots of people go down for a long weekend to Vegas. I mean, it's only a couple hour flight from here. I mean, Formula One in Vegas sounds like a great long weekend to me. I mean, you know, count me in. So it certainly is. I think it's encouraging, too, to see that despite all the criticism and the negativity that we see around Formula One, a lot of it's deserved. Let's be honest, and some of it I think is maybe a little bit unfair. But sometimes I think when once you get a reputation for something, then rightly or wrongly, sometimes it sort of seems to snowball and build up on you. But despite all the things that they've had, I mean, we've had some good races this year. It obviously didn't start very excitingly. It wasn't very good. I mean, it looked like Mercedes were just going to walk away with it, and the championship would be over by the time we even made it back to Europe at the beginning of the summer. But slowly but surely, I mean, they faltered here and there. They're not as ironclad and as strong as that we'd like to think or talk about at times. And Mercedes have dropped some races here and there. I mean, they just were knocked not the fastest cars in Austria. Max got a win there, and of course they were really the victims of the circumstances in Germany a couple of weeks ago, which was their 200th race in Formula One, and that was frustrating and disappointing and quite embarrassing to see their car sliding off and in the gravel and in the tire wall and stuff like that. But other drivers have been able to win. And I think that just that on top of it, we've also seen some more exciting races in the past two and a half months. And it is good to see that despite all the criticisms that the TV numbers are up, and it really asks the question that if Formula One can get it right with all these regs that they're trying to come out with and perfect and finalize for 2021, what where the potential is. I mean, the people are starting to tune in. People are starting to get interested. Maybe some people are starting to get reinterested and get reacquainted with Formula One in the States again. So obviously, it's a huge, huge market, and I think that those are numbers that that the big wigs at Formula One really need to sit up and pay attention to, and see what else they can do to keep growing it. I mean, there's obviously lots of room for growth, not just in the States, but everywhere else around the world. I mean, Asia is another market, so it'll be interesting to see where they take it from here. All right, so next item up is, and well, this should be fairly self-explanatory, and that is that Charles Leclerc says that he feels quite a bit of weight has been lifted off of his shoulders after winning his first race in Spa-Francorchamps over the past weekend. And as I said off the top of the show, it certainly was a long time coming. And after he was robbed of victory by mechanical issues in Bahrain, and then everybody was outraced and out and pushed out of the way by Max Verstappen at one point or another at the Austrian Grand Prix. But that was two strikes, I guess, in Charles Leclerc's eyes. And I was starting to wonder, well, you know, is it ever going to happen for the guy this year? Because it you know, once we got past Austria and, we get to a couple more Mercedes wins here and there, you kind of have to start asking yourself, and I'm sure that Charles was thinking it too, gosh, you know, I had a couple of opportunities to win my first race this year and it hasn't worked out, and Mercedes has been so much better than we are, and we just don't have the car that's capable of winning races. Is it ever going to happen for me this year? And, well, the answer was it did eventually for Charles Leclerc, and he looked pretty damn good doing it as well. I mean, he was very good in qualifying, I mean, to take another pole position, and he's done that a couple of times this year. And just very, very mature, I thought, a very mature drive, and I think that it was played very well by Ferrari as well. I think that, talking back, like we were talking about before the break in the first segment, Sebastian Vettel and Charles Leclerc playing that very, very nicely. And I'm kind of jumping ahead a little bit of myself in my notes here, but this is, I guess, a little bit more, fitting at this point. And Sebastian Vettel says that collaborating with Leclerc is the key to overcoming Mercedes. And I think that that is a very good point. I think that especially this year, I think they have to do what they can to try and win races. And Sebastian did play like an excellent starting role. I mean, ideally, they'll be able to get back onto a similar competitive footing with Mercedes like they had over the past couple of years, last year especially. Excuse me, but and then, you know, both of them will be in a good position to fight for it. Because, I mean, usually, I mean, let's be fair, I mean, any given Sunday, Lewis Hamilton and Valtteri Bottas both have a car that is capable of winning a race, and they should be able to do so in quite dominating fashion. And we've seen that not that just this year, but many times over, basically since 2014, either Lewis Hamilton and Nico Rosberg or Lewis Hamilton and Valtteri Bottas, take your pick. But it's going to be up to everyone else to really work hard to catch up with them. And Ferrari proved last year, especially up until Spa and Monza, and I'll talk about this a little bit more when we talk about the Italian Grand Prix, is that once their challenge started to fade and the cracks really started to show up in Ferrari's season, then it was a bit of a different story. And I think that they, by and large, became their own worst enemy. I mean, I've been very critical about Sebastian Vettel and the mistakes that he made last year. But I mean, as much as it was his fault for some of the things that happened, I mean, some of the clashes he had, the comings together with Max Verstappen in Japan, that was one. I mean, in Austin was another one. I mean, the team let him down as well with slightly below par tactics and strategies in the race and stuff like that. So they were all complicit. But if they can get back on to a more competitive footing, and even if they don't, I mean, if there's an opportunity where one guy is able to support the other and still go for a race win in a season where, I mean, let's be honest, I mean, they're not going to win the Constructors' Championship, and one of their drivers is not going to be the world champion this year either. But just from the point of building some momentum and getting some confidence back into the team, a team that was looking, that had a car that looked so good through the first half of last season, it really is disappointing. And if they can start to do anything that I think starts going back towards that, even if it means it's a result similar to like we saw in Spa, where one driver helps the other, one goes on to the race win, while the other guy finishes down the race order a little bit, like Vettel. I mean, he was fourth in a country mile behind, Valtteri Bottas in third place. I think you got to take that. I think wins are wins. It doesn't really matter how you get them. And I think that the bigger picture of Ferrari winning and their drivers winning, no matter how they do it, has to be the bigger objective. But it is interesting, though. I mean, despite all the things that have happened, Luca di Montezemolo has said that despite everything that's gone on, Sebastian Vettel is not their number two driver. We'll talk a little bit more about that in just a moment after we take a short break here on the Overtime Media Network. Don't go away. We'll be back in just a moment.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, well, welcome back to the program, and we're talking about Ferrari and Sebastian Vettel, but first of all, it was the opening night of the National Football League here, and great to see it back. And if you were one of the lucky people to go and watch the Chicago Bears and the Green Bay Packers at Soldier Field this evening, I'm really jealous of you, but don't worry about that, because we've teamed up with Vivid Seats, and with more games coming up this weekend, head on over to their sites, vividseats.com. Use the promo code OVERTIME in their mobile app and save up to $100 on all ticket purchases for first-time customers only. So that's great. I love the NFL. For me, this is a great time of year, being the sports fan that I am. Formula One, baseball's going, football's going, hockey and basketball are right around the corner. So, you know, it gets to a point that I have to really prioritize my free time, because it can get eaten up really quickly with all the things that that are going on. So anyway, so let's talk now a little bit more what I was hinting to before the break. And that is Luca di Montezemolo was saying that even though that Sebastian Vettel has not won a race in more than 12 months, last time he won was at the Belgian Grand Prix back in 2018. And that was a very impressive win. Again, Ferrari was quite dominant. They had the advantage over Mercedes that weekend, and Sebastian was able to stay out and keep Lewis Hamilton at arm's length for the entire race. And it really, I thought, for me was a good way for them to start, and a good way for Sebastian to start the second half of the season, because before that, we had the Hungarian Grand Prix, and they were just a mile behind Lewis Hamilton after Valtteri Bottas played mobile roadblock for such a long time that by the time both of the Ferraris got around him, Raikkonen and Vettel were just not able to make up any meaningful ground on Lewis Hamilton in that race. And that was a bit of a frustrating way to go into the summer break after, of course, previous to that was the German Grand Prix, and that's when Sebastian slid off a slippery circuit during a rain shower and put it into the gravel in the stadium section there. But they came back. I thought it was a very solid race, and it has been a long time coming for Sebastian Vettel. And sometimes I sit there and I watch and see, and especially this past weekend, I kind of think to myself, have we seen peak Sebastian Vettel? Will he ever win another race again for Ferrari? I mean, being a little bit dramatic here, and I just start to wonder now. I mean, well, is he going to get another shot at the World Championship? I mean, he's got four under his belt. I mean, he obviously wants to win one at Ferrari. I mean, I think any driver who goes to Ferrari. I think that's got to be the big goal in mind. I mean, everybody wants to be world champion, but if you're a driver at Ferrari, I think it would just be that much sweeter if you could get your world champion or win the world championship as a Ferrari driver. But seeing the bad luck that he's had, and some of his own fault, some of the team, some of it combined, and just the way that he just really seems stuck in a rut. It just I keep asking myself this question until he wins another race. I'll probably ask myself that each and every weekend as to whether or not he's going to be able to win another race and whether or not he'll be able to win the world championship again. I think obviously that he's got what it takes to win a race again. Whether or not, excuse me, he's in a good position now to challenge for another world championship is a really a good point for discussion, because Charles Leclerc has obviously come into the team this year and been very impressive through the first 13 races or so. Took a little while to get that first race victory, but you know, he's not the best driver out there anymore. He might not even be the best driver in his own team. I mean, it might be a little bit sacrilegious for me to say that. I mean, the Sebastian Vettel fanboys might be a little bit upset, for me to say that. But I mean, I think it's a legit question to ask. And I haven't got the stats in front of me this right now, but I really would be interested to see what the split is between Vettel and Leclerc, especially in qualifying. It seems over the course of one lap that Leclerc has the advantage over Sebastian Vettel. And I know that they both have equal equipment, but Charles just seems to be able to get more out of equipment that might not be completely optimal than it's supposed to be. I mean, we were talking a little bit earlier about how he was better than Marcus Ericsson last year with the Sauber, and this year at times he's better than Sebastian Vettel. I mean, Vettel of course had two very, very good races in Hungary and Germany and scored points there, and he took points away from Charles at the Hungarian Grand Prix, because I mean, his pit strategy, his tactics for that race, I thought were completely on point. He stopped for another pit stop when other people had chosen only to do one. I mean, he was quite a long ways behind Charles after the second pit stop, some 25, maybe even closer to 30 seconds. But I mean, he took huge chunks out of his time, was able to erase that deficit. And then when it came down to it, I mean, he really passed his teammate with ease. But it is interesting when you have somebody that, with the stature of Luca di Montezemolo to come out and say that Vettel shouldn't be written off as a number two driver. And he believes that he has all the skill and the talents that is needed to bounce back in Formula One. And di Montezemolo said that the role that Vettel played in assisting Leclerc's victory at Spa was shouldn't be underestimated. And he went on to say that Sebastian was crucial for the victory, and I think that's something that most of us would agree with. But he goes on to say, and I quote, "I think without Sebastian it was very difficult for Leclerc to win the race. Very difficult, because Sebastian was able to hold back Lewis Hamilton for a few laps. Sebastian for me is still a very, very good. I think the pair of drivers is very good. In the normal life you have some moments with some difficulties, but I'm sure he has all the characteristics to come back. I hope very soon, and I hope in a few days." And he goes on to talk more about that, and he says Vettel is not a number two, Vettel is a number one, and Leclerc is in the process to be a number one, so it is good to have two number ones. And I think Luca has completely nailed it there. I agree with that 100%. I mean, Vettel obviously mired in a rut that he's been in probably way longer than he's comfortable or wish that he was in, but certainly he has the talent. I mean, he is not a four-time world champion by some fluke or by some accident. I mean, he's got real talent. He is with the top team. Okay, they don't have the best car this year, but he's got to be motivated. I mean, he is motivated. I mean, he's now won championship behind Lewis Hamilton. Last year they were tied on four, and so Lewis went on to win number five. Looks like he's odd on favorites to win world championship number six. I think that Vettel would be looking at that keenly and thinking, you know, I can do that too. It's just not working out at the moment, but I want that victory, or sorry, that fifth world World Championship at least want to get it with Ferrari. I mean, he's a big fan of Michael Schumacher, and we all know what Schumacher and Ferrari did together in the early 2000s. I mean, it was precedent setting. I mean, Mercedes and Lewis Hamilton are on course to do something similar. And I at one point thought that Schumacher's 7 World Championships were unassailable. But last year, after Lewis won number 5, I started thinking, okay, well, it's within reach now. And if things keep going the way that they're going at Mercedes, that it's a real danger for those of you that are Schumacher fans that that record may fall sooner rather than later. I mean, this year, and it's Lewis's championship to lose. I can't see him blowing it now, not with a 65-point lead, not with the car that he has. And then, of course, next year coming back, I mean, can we really write off Mercedes? No, of course not. They've just proven too good for too long over too many years. And you always have to consider Lewis and a Mercedes odds-on favorite to win the world championship. But, of course, that's one motivation for Sebastian Vettel. And, of course, he wants to be better than his teammate. I think that he's going to do everything that he needs to do to stay ahead and keep ahead of Charles Leclerc. I'm sure on a one-off that he's happy to play the supporting role. I mean, who doesn't like or want to see a young up-and-comer have some success? I mean, it was a great moment to see that for Charles Leclerc. I mean, he is obviously the future, maybe the future of Formula One, maybe the future of Ferrari, maybe the future of both. I mean, certainly, I mean, he has really not tapped the ceiling of his potential yet. And at 21, 22 years of age, whatever Charles Leclerc is, there is a lot of racing, a lot of years left for him in Formula One. And there is still a lot more to write in that story. And I still think that there is a lot for Sebastian Vettel to write in his own story. So we'll have to wait and see how it goes. I mean, this would be a great time this weekend for them to turn it around. And I still think that they have a legit shot to win that one. And like I say, it's another power circuit, not too many technical or twisty sections in the track. I mean, it's a minimum there. I mean, it's basically flat out all the way. But they really need to do themselves a favor. I mean, last year, Hamilton and Vettel getting tangled up towards the just only halfway around the first lap. I mean, that was more obviously Vettel's fault than Hamilton's. Shouldn't have happened. I mean, Vettel should have been a little bit smarter about that, but there was a bit of a disadvantage from his eye. We'll talk about that a little bit later when we talk a little bit more about the Italian Grand Prix right at the end of the show here. But just a couple of other things before we go into the break. And first of all, these are all kind of some Danny Ricciardo themed stories. And first of all, he said that he was bothered by the crowd at Spa-Francorchamps cheering of Lewis Hamilton when he crashed in practice. And he said that he urged the spectators to behave better and act like what he called true fans rather than celebrate crashes as they did when people started cheering after Lewis Hamilton crashed in practice on Friday and went off. It was a bit of a weird one, just the way that Lewis went off of the track and was just not able to bring the car to a halt before he hit the tire barrier. And Formula One seems to be a little bit different than other sports. I mean, we're all used to booing and jeering in other sports, especially sometimes if the opponent is struggling a little bit. I mean, we're used to seeing and hearing cheering in Formula One, but usually that's reserved more for when somebody passes somebody else. I mean, let's go back to Austria and all the Dutch fans there and everybody really making a lot of noise, especially as Max was carving his way through the field en route to victory. So I really don't know where to really weigh in onto this one. On one hand, I can understand Ricciardo saying that it's not the way that we do things in Formula One. But I mean, like so many other sports out there, people don't get a free pass, and should Formula One be any different? I mean, you don't really want to celebrate in somebody's misery, or if somebody gets hurt, obviously we don't want to do anything like that. So a bit of an interesting comment from Daniel Ricciardo. Anyways, time for a final break here on the program this week. We're going to start closing it down after this, but there's still a couple more things to talk about, including what's going to happen at the Italian Grand Prix this weekend. So don't go away. We'll be back in just one moment. All All right, welcome back to Scuderi F1 here in the Vivid Seats studio. So let's talk a little bit more about what Danny Ricciardo is saying, that Spa was a boost for Renault despite no points. And I don't know, I guess is this kind of the glass is half full or the glass is half empty? I think it's a little bit, I don't want to say it's a bit of a boast, but I guess he obviously sees something in it. But it really, for me, seems a bit of an odd comment. I mean, they just have not been able to get it right all year. And they just continue to struggle. And the way that he was passed several times throughout you know, that race, I mean, it was made to, I wouldn't say look foolish, but I mean, he obviously was at a deficit when compared to some of the other drivers. So interesting that Ricciardo should weigh in with that that sentiment. And he says, quote, for the weekend itself, I think it was a very, very strong weekend for us on pace. And coming into some of these more low downforce circuits like Monza and that, I think it's promising. So we've just got to keep it rolling. Obviously, we've missed out on double points. I think we could have had a good handful, but we'll move on. So he did say that that he had some problems with lack of downforce that he suffered because he was hit by Stroll on the opening lap of the race. There was just kind of in that as everybody kind of got out through turn one at La Source there and started to spread out a little bit, he did get tapped a little bit by Lance Stroll. So obviously he believes that there was enough damage done to the car that it interfered with the downforce and was very led to what wasn't maybe the greatest finish for him, but certainly he feels like that there was some positive. But talking now about his teammate Nico Hülkenberg, and of course last week I talked about the rumor that was out there that he might get replaced by Esteban Ocon at Renault for next year, and it was all rumors. And literally after the show went out available for download, the news actually was official that Hülkenberg is out at Renault for 2020 and will be replaced by Esteban Ocon. And of course I didn't mention it last year. It makes total sense. French driver in a French team with a French car with a French engine, it just makes sense. I mean, it is a bit of a risk in one regard, because I mean, Esteban Ocon only has a year and a bit of Formula One under his belt, but he has proven in that time that he is a very talented driver. And if he can get a good car at Renault, which they've been promising and hinting towards for many, many years now, but just haven't been able to deliver, really makes me wonder what Esteban Ocon could do. And also Danny Ricciardo, and I'm just gonna go off on a bit of a tangent here before I come back to talk about Nico Hülkenberg. But there were some court filings that were released earlier this week, and this is to do with there's a lawsuit from Ricciardo's former agent, and all this breach of contract and stuff like that. But some of the interesting things that that came out as a result of that, and this was tweeted out by Formula Money at Formula Money on Twitter, and some of the highlights that that they found in there was Renault promised Danny Ricciardo the Formula One car, which will help him win his first race for them. And then Ricciardo was offered an appearance fee to star on the Drive to Survive series on Netflix, which he featured in quite prominently last year in season one. I don't know. It doesn't really specifically say which year that. So Ricciardo was also in talks to be an ambassador for Huawei, the mobile phone provider. And then there was a whole bunch of benefits that were itemized as well. But those were a couple of the interesting ones that that came out there. So some big things there, promising a car that will win races and things like that. So I really don't know what to make about that. I mean, certainly they have to deliver a lot more. But anyways, going back to Nico Hülkenberg, of course, he's out at Renault for next year. And he seems rather relaxed, kind of nonchalant about a deal for 2020, and he says on his own behalf on the situation that there's no urgency in sealing a 2020 deal at the moment. So he says that there are a lot of options out there. I mean, there's potential openings at Haas. Grosjean is the name that kind of seems to be getting thrown around there, that might be on the chopping block there. I mean, he's had plenty of cracks at Formula One. He's had plenty of cracks at getting it done with Haas F1 has really worked out. And I mean, Grosjean has made the headlines quite a few times over the years for a lot of the wrong reasons. And so I could see him going, moving on from there. But Alfa Romeo is another possibility. I mean, Kimi Raikkonen has got one more year there in 2020, and then that's it. He's done. He's retiring from Formula One. Giovinazzi, disappointing. I mean, he hasn't been able to really get it done for them now. I mean, as of going into the Belgian Grand Prix, Giovinazzi had scored one out of the 33 points that Alfa has in the Constructors' Championship, and Kimi had scored all other 32 points. So obviously that's all coming from one guy, so you can see why they would want to make a change there. But the tantalizing one, and I think the interesting one that's out there is Red Bull. I mean, they pulled the trigger once again. They have the history of it now. I mean, you do it once and make a mid-season driver change, then that's just a one-off. And now, replacing Pierre Gasly with Alex Albon for the remainder of 2019, that was a big thing as well. And Albon, I mean, is he just there to fill in the seat? Is he there to showcase himself for the rest of the year, whatever you want to call that? I guess it's a little bit of both, but like I say, I mean, with Red Bull, they have a number of drivers they already know. I mean, Kvyat, I think, has had a very good year so far for Toro Rosso. I mean, he's a name I think that's going to get consideration. I mean, he was a bit of an afterthought, and let's be honest about that. I mean, they wanted to put other guys into one of those cars, but surprisingly, despite having a junior driver program and all those things, they have a severe lack of guys that don't have enough super points to qualify for. They don't have enough points to qualify for their super license. So Danny Kvyat, fortunately from his point of view, is able to slide back into a race seat for 2019 after taking a year out and being the simulator driver over at Ferrari. So worked out nicely for him. So he's a known quantity, especially what he's done at Toro Rosso, also what he did previously with Red Bull in the several races there back in 2016 before he was dumped and replaced by Max Verstappen. But then Alex Albon, I mean, it is his first year in Formula One. He gets 10, 12 races, whatever it is, under his belt in the Toro Rosso. And I think he had a very good debut for Red Bull at Spa last weekend. Like I say, it was a bit of a 50-50 thing. First half of the race, it was all right. Second half of the race was much, much better. So he's showcasing himself to go out and claim that race seat for next year. But if you're Red Bull and a guy like Nico Hülkenberg is available, I think you have to take a long, hard look at that. I mean, the Hulk has been in Formula One for a number of years, but never really with a team that had a legit shot of really being a contender to not just win races, but I mean, even score points. I mean, Force India during his time there, they had their moments. I mean, Renault over the past year and a bit, I mean, during his time there, I mean, so. I mean, they're good for some low point finishes from time to time. I mean, they're still a long way off of being seriously able to challenge for podiums. But if you're a team like Red Bull and you're kind of wondering, okay, what are we going to do for 2020? Do we put Gasly back in here? He didn't really get it done. Kvyat has done well for our junior team, our sister team at Toro Rosso. But if we were to elevate him back to Red Bull, does he have the skills to get it done there? And if he can, is he going to be any better than, say, Alexander Albon or Pierre Gasly? That's a great question. But, I mean, would Nico Hülkenberg be able to get it done in a Red Bull? I mean, he's very highly thought of. He won Le Mans a couple of years ago. So he's got a lot of, I think he's got a lot going for him. I think he's a good driver. And, just the fact that he's raced over 150 Grand Prix and still doesn't have a podium for his name, a lot of people say that doesn't really reflect how good of a driver he is. So I think that is a space to watch to see whether or not that is going to become a thing, and whether or not Nico Hülkenberg is going to end up at Red Bull for 2020. I would like to see it. Whether it happens, don't know if that's going to happen or not. Anyways, let's talk a little bit now quickly about the Italian Grand Prix before we shut it down here. Just some stats. It is a 53-lap race. The circuit length is almost 5.8 kilometers long. Race distance is just a hair under 307 kilometers. And Rubens Barrichello holds the lap record, which is a 121.046, which was set way back in 2004. The tires that Pirelli are bringing this week are the hard C2s, the medium C3s, and the soft C4s. So it, again, power circuit. I mean, if you look at the outline, the circuit map of Monza, there are an awful lot of straight portions to it, and not really too many tight, twisty corners. I mean, we have the Rettifilio. We have that right angle chicane right at the end of the start-finish straight, and it's all basically flat out. I mean, when they go through Parabolica there, right at the end of the lap coming into the start-finish, absolutely spectacular stuff. So it's going to be good fun to watch them. And the race from last year, it was Lewis Hamilton winning this one. Kimi Raikkonen in the Ferrari, Valtteri Bottas in Mercedes for rounding out the top three. Sebastian Vettel, despite having a first lap coming together with Lewis Hamilton in this one, managed to finish in fourth position. There was Max Verstappen, Esteban Ocon, Sergio Perez, Carlos Sainz, and then Lance Stroll in racing for Williams, rounding out the top 10. Oh, I beg your pardon. It was Lance Stroll and Sergei Sorotkin in the second Williams last year, coming home in 9th and 10th. And my goodness, looking at where Williams is this year, I'm sure they would love to get a 9th and a 10th position, you know, get some world championship points. But certainly that seems like a very long time ago. But last year, in this one, it was interesting because there was this predetermined order that they had for the qualifying that Ferrari had. So going out in Q3, it was Sebastian Vettel that was ahead of Kimi Raikkonen. And then Raikkonen, of course, gets the benefit of the tow, especially coming into the start-finish straight. And it was very, very close. Raikkonen setting a time in Q3 of a 119.119, which was good enough for claiming pole. And that was just a whisker ahead of Sebastian Vettel, who set a second place time of 119.280. And then Lewis Hamilton set his time of a 119.294. So, I mean, the three of them literally just a hair apart from the pole position to third. But Vettel just being a little bit disadvantaged as having to go first in Q3, and then his teammate getting the benefit of the tow. I mean, when they were that close, it was just the slipstream that really benefited Kimi Raikkonen. And I couldn't help but wonder, and I mean, Sebastian, I mean, can only answer for himself what he was thinking when he had that coming together with Lewis Hamilton. Should he have backed off? Should he have waited to, maybe try and pass Hamilton somewhere else? That's hindsight is 2020. You can go back and revisit that one, but certainly he should have not have been in that position. I mean, he was the favorite. He was the guy that was contending for the world championship. So it was a bit of an odd thing for them to do. But they said that they had their own way of predetermining it, and it was Raikkonen's turn to go out last, go second in Q3, and that's just the way it was. And I mean, ultimately, he wasn't able to hold on to it. I mean, he had trouble with the tires, but I mean, he wasn't able to hold off Lewis Hamilton forever, but he was able to hold him off long enough, and he was able to hold him off and still managed to come home in second position. I was thinking too that at that time, I was saying earlier, as well, I sometimes wonder if Sebastian Vettel will ever win a race again. And I was thinking, what with Kimi, you know, sort of coming to the end of his career. And I can't even remember if this was before he had announced he was going to Alfa Romeo, but I thought, well, maybe this is the last time we'll ever get to see Kimi Raikkonen seriously challenging for a Grand Prix win. And I was a little bit disappointed after it was all said and done. I mean, all good on Lewis for winning that one, but I was disappointed that that Raikkonen couldn't actually go on to win that race. But we got to see the Iceman up on the top step of the podium just a couple of races later when he won the U.S. Grand Prix at the Circuit of the Americas just a month or so later in that season. But it is a powerful track. And again, I think the real question is, It's not so much about the world championship. I mean, it is basically a foregone conclusion. We've been talking about that for quite a long time here on the program this year. I think it really is who's making positive or getting some positive momentum for next year, even for this year. And I think the question is, can anybody other than Mercedes get it done? And after seeing what Ferrari was able to do last week at Spa, can they continue what they started last week? Was it just a one-off, or will the flat-out circumstances of Monza be beneficial to them, and will they be able to keep the momentum going? And of course, if a Ferrari is to win, is it going to be Vettel? Is it going to be Leclerc? If Leclerc is leading that race and Sebastian is stuck behind him, you know, do team orders come into effect? And that is a great question. Anyways, just some more stats about the Italian Grand Prix. There are two drivers that have won it five times each. And fittingly, it is the two gentlemen we were talking about a little bit earlier. Who's going to be the number one by the time it's all said and done in terms of world championships? And that's Michael Schumacher and Lewis Hamilton. Lewis, of course, has won it quite a few times in recent years. He's won it four times since 2014, most recently last year. So he's going for three in a row this weekend at Monza. And then Nelson Piquet won it four times in the 80s. And there's a number of drivers that have won it three times, including Tazio Nuvolari, Alberto Ascari, Juan Manuel Fangio, Stirling Moss, Ronnie Peterson, Alan Prost, Rubens Barrichello won it three times, and Sebastian Vettel has won there three times as well. Some very, very big names in that list. So anyways, I think that is a good place to wrap it up for this week. So again, apologize for having the show a little bit later than normal, but I do appreciate you hanging in there, and appreciate all the comments and tweets that we get. And if you would like to help and support the show, the best and the easiest way, and only takes you a couple of minutes of your time, is to leave a five-star rating review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you download and listen to the show, and we would greatly appreciate it. Anyways, if you have any comments or feedback, you send me an email at scuderiaf1@gmail.com or tweet me at scuderiaf1 on the Twitters. And that's it. That's a wrap. Thank you for listening. Enjoy the Italian Grand Prix, and I'll be back earlier next week. I'll do my best at any rate to come back and talk about the Grand Prix a little bit earlier to make up for this week. But that's it. That's it. I'm out for now. Talk to you guys again soon. Ciao.
Thanks for listening to the Scuderia F1 podcast. If you want to get the show notes for this episode, then head over to scuderiaf1pod.com. Want to get in touch with us? Then email us at scuderiaf1pod@gmail.com.